When I was 20 years old, I worked the night shift at Walmart when it was still open 24 hours. The majority of it was stocking shelves rather than dealing with customers. Not many other employees were needed to work nights either. Of course, the occasions when I did have to deal with people were some of the weirdest encounters of my life. One night, I was putting toys up on the shelves in the boys section when a man appeared at the end of the aisle. I looked over and saw he was smiling. He was a larger man, over 6 feet tall and muscular. He was also rough-looking and had a lot of tattoos, making it seem obvious he had spent a long time doing hard manual labor or hard time in prison. Or, more likely, both. Either way, with me being on the shorter side and not being athletic, this guy dwarfed me. After we made eye contact, he commented on the toy box I was holding in my hand that I had meant to put on the shelf. It was a G.I. Joe action figure. The man said I would look cute playing with that doll. Taken aback, I asked him to repeat himself. The man laughed it off and moved on. But what he said next wasn't any better. He asked me where the lube was. I sighed and told him it was all the way on the other side of the store, near the pharmacy, by the condoms, which were next to the medicines. Unfortunately, I also had to tell him that the shelf with all the family planning type things was locked up, so I had to go with him and unlock it. Not only did I have to stop what I was doing for this guy, I also had to walk with him for several hundred feet. He, on the other hand, was pleased. I tried to walk as quickly as possible, but he intentionally lagged behind so he could get more time to talk to me. It was normal small talk at first, but then he started asking increasingly personal questions about me. It started out with asking where I went to school, how long I'd been working at Walmart, and by the time we finally got to the aisle and I opened up the shelf for him, he was asking if I ever had a girlfriend. When I said no, he asked me if that was because it wasn't girls that I was into. I was speechless. The man reached into the shelf and took out the bottle of lube, then grabbed my wrist and pulled my arm up, placing the lube in my hand. Then, he told me that this kind of lube was the best for beginners because it had a numbing agent. I recoiled in shock, shoving the bottle at him and slamming the shelf closed. I told him off for being a creep and threatened to have him kicked out of the store, then I stormed back to the toy aisle so I could get back to work. He didn't follow me, but I made quick work of clearing the cart so I could go into the back of the store. I hid there for as long as I could get away with, then I went back out and unloaded another cart. I didn't see anyone out there the whole time. I figured the creep had left. I entered the second stall, closed the door, and sat down on the toilet. Immediately, I realized I'd made a horrible mistake, as I saw a pair of feet lowering to the floor of the stall next to me. They clearly belonged to the man from before. It was as if he had been hiding and waiting for me. In a panic, I rushed to stand up and put on my pants, but before I knew it, the man had come out of the stall and walked around to block my escape. I could see his feet just below the door and just barely the top of his head above it. He told me from the other side to hold out my hands because this was my last chance to apply the lube, as he wasn't going to bother with it. Then, his hand emerged at the top of the door and held the bottle of lube over it. The bottle was open. He squeezed it, sending a long, slimy strand of fluid spilling to the floor. He made a wet, slapping sound on the tile as it formed a puddle. He said he was giving me a moment to rub it all the way in. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. I was trapped. Suddenly, the door swung open with a bang. The lock didn't stand a chance of stopping him. He stood in the doorway, grinning. He saw that I had my pants on and told me I made the wrong choice. Then he lunged forward at me. He pinned me against the wall, then grabbed me by my throat and started to squeeze, strangling me. The blood flow to my brain was cut off. Despite my attempts to hit his face and groin and try to break free, everything started to go black. I couldn't even scream. I was on the verge of passing out. A moment before it was over, I felt my neck get released and my body fell to the floor. I don't know how long it took for me to fully wake back up, but when I did, I saw the man fighting with one of my coworkers. They had their belt wrapped around his neck, and they were strangling him from behind. But they were being slammed against the wall, so I ran up, jammed my thumbs into his eyes, and kicked him in the groin. He shouted in pain, but then he kicked me back to the floor and threw my coworker over his shoulder. They landed on me as the man ran off. We were too hurt to follow. We weren't seriously injured, but the man got away. And police never caught up to him. I owe my old coworker everything for saving me from what was about to happen. If he had held off for 20 more minutes, he would have walked into a much more gruesome scene. I grew up in a small town in the middle of nowhere that was like a tiny tumor on the artery that was Interstate 40. Naturally, this meant there weren't many jobs to choose from. By the time I was 18, I knew I wanted to move away, but I had no money, so I got the only job I could, the graveyard shift at the gas station. It was miserable hours and terrible pay, and there was pretty much nothing to do except keep the store open for late night travelers. I worked there for about 6 months from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., Monday through Saturday. It was monotonous and mind-numbing, and it was all I did. I was always too tired during the day and had become an antisocial hermit. I saved up money, little by little. I spent every hour there daydreaming about finally packing all my stuff into my truck and driving until I saw the ocean for the first time in my life. That dream kept me there. But I was waiting for something to happen that would make me leave before my goal of saving $10,000. One night, I got my wish in the worst of ways. The first half of the evening had gone normally. Then it hit 3 a.m., the deadest hour of the night. That was always when I took my 30-minute break. People rarely came in while I was off the clock, but I still helped them. That night, I was doing my usual break routine of lying on the floor on a blanket when I heard a vehicle roll into the station and shut off the engine. I stayed put since I didn't expect them to come inside. Several minutes passed, and I didn't hear anything. I figured after a while, they would have finished pumping their gas and left, which meant I would have heard them start their engine. Finally, I got up to see what was happening. What I saw sent a chill down my spine. There was a man parked at the pump, standing next to an old white windowless van. He was staring across the pavement into the store. When I came into view, he turned his head and looked directly at me. We stared at each other for an uncomfortable amount of time before he finally walked very slowly into the store. He entered and stopped on the doormat, staring at me for another awkward few seconds. I asked him if he needed help with anything. Then he walked up to the counter and put down a $50 bill. I asked what he wanted, and in a very deep, raspy voice, he slowly asked for a single cigarillo, a lighter, all these $1 bottles of Fireball, and the rest on gas. I asked how many bottles he wanted, and he grabbed two handfuls from the display by the register and dropped them on the counter. In total, it was 12 bottles. After all that, there was still about $30 for gas. I started to put the little bottles in a bag, but the man quickly grunted to say no. He picked up one of the bottles and handed it to me. I declined to take it at first, but he aggressively shoved it at me, so I decided to go along with him. He opened one for himself, and we both chugged them down at the same time. Immediately after, he opened another and poured the whole thing in his mouth, dropping the empty bottle onto the floor. Then he opened another and drank it too. I told him to stop dropping them, but he ignored me. I didn't get paid enough to fight him, so I let him do his thing. He downed every single last one. Finally, he took his cigarillo, unwrapped it, and stuck it into his mouth. He put his lighter in his pocket and left with a quiet, "thank you." I was amused but also freaked out. Nobody should drive after drinking that much, I thought. And was he also about to smoke the cigar while pumping his gas? That's what it looked like. So about a minute after he walked out the door, I peeked outside to see what he was doing. To my horror, I saw the worst possible outcome. The man was standing at the back door of his van, cigar in his mouth, holding the nozzle to his side, pouring gasoline all over the ground. I gasped in shock, paralyzed for a moment as he stared at me with an empty expression. I snapped into action and ran out of the store to push the emergency stop button on the outside wall, but when I got to it, I realized something heartbreaking. The protective covering over the button had been padlocked shut while I was on the floor ignoring him. I turned back to the man spewing gasoline all over the station. He was looking at me still. His clothes were drenched in fuel. The smell of gasoline was overpowering. I screamed at him, begging him to stop. Instead, he reached into his pocket and pulled out the lighter, put it up to the cigar, and then sparked the flint. The vapors ignited into a massive fireball, instantly engulfing him and the van in flames. The heat and pressure blew me back and singed my face. When the initial blast dissipated, the entire station was still in flames. The nozzle was spewing what looked like lava all over the ground. I saw the man still standing, burning silently before falling to the ground, almost looking calm. I finally came to my senses and ran, dialing 911. By the time firefighters arrived, the entire pumping area of the gas station was a charred heap, and the flames were spreading to the store. They managed to save it from being totally destroyed, and luckily, my truck was parked in the back and came out unscathed. Human remains were found in the van, evidently in a tied-up position, charred beyond recognition. Weeks later, my dad called and told me dental records revealed it was his wife. Nobody knows for sure what happened between them that caused the incident. But I didn't stick around to find out. I skipped town a few days later, and I've never been back. I don't think I ever can. That town is now the location of my worst memory. The night I watched a man burn himself alive. I used to be a police officer for 22 years. I retired due to a back injury, and now I'm in law school. My fellow students are often curious about my experience on the force. One thing they ask about is the scariest thing I went through on the job, and I always have the same answer. It was my first year as an officer. Back then, I was stuck on the graveyard shift. I had a partner, Kurt, who had a little more experience. We had a set neighborhood to patrol. We would drive up and down the blocks for about an hour. Then we would park and shut off the engine for a little while before getting back on the street. When there was a call, we answered it. When there was a drunk driver, we pulled them over. Sometimes stuff just happened right in front of us, and this was one of those times. Kurt and I were rolling down one of the more dangerous streets in the neighborhood when a woman came running out of an alleyway, screaming for help. She was waving her hands in the air, wearing dirty clothes and had thin, greasy hair, so it seemed like she was living in that alley. Kurt parked the car up on the curb, and I got out to help the woman. She was completely hysterical, sobbing incoherently. By the time I calmed her down and asked what was wrong, Kurt was with us. She pointed back to the alleyway and screamed that her boyfriend was dying. She said it over and over, "He's dying, he's dying, he's dying." But she never said what he was dying from. She began at that moment to topple over onto me, hanging from my shoulders and still sobbing and screaming. Kurt told me to stay put with her while he checked out the alley. Then he walked off into the shadows while I was stuck with a wailing wreck of a woman. She was totally inconsolable. I tried to calm her down, but she was grabbing at my clothes, begging me to save her boyfriend. I kept pushing her away, telling her to stay put. But she kept getting in my personal space, putting me on edge and wearing my patience thin. I was over it quite quickly, so I hollered over to Kurt. I was hoping for him to give any reason for me to ditch the woman that was climbing all over me. Instead, I heard nothing. No response. I shouted again, even louder, but still had no word from Kurt. I knew something was wrong, so I had to make my way over to the alleyway. However, when I looked down at the woman at my chest, I noticed that suddenly she was very calm. Then I saw her arm at my side, trying to unholster my service weapon. I shoved her away as hard as I could, but she pulled out a knife and came running right back at me. I acted on my reflexes and quickly unholstered my weapon, firing it 3 times. The woman collapsed at my feet. I stepped back, afraid she might try to cut my ankles. She was silent for a moment before she groaned in pain, gasped for air, and reached for her wounds, then passed out. I knew she would most likely die before the ambulance arrived, and I couldn't help her as I had to help Kurt, but I called in for backup and medical. Just after finishing my sentence to dispatch, the initial reflexive surge of numbness went away, and a wave of dread washed over me, chilling my blood to ice. I was alone. I had just killed a woman, and my partner was in dire need of help. If there was any hope of saving him, if he was even still alive, I had to enter that alley and confront the other perpetrator, or perpetrators, however many of them there were. I could wait for backup, but those few minutes might be the difference between Kurt living or dying. The weight and reality of the duty I swore myself to suddenly became crystal clear. I steeled myself and approached the entrance of the alleyway with my service weapon still drawn. It was a dead end. Light from the street illuminated the first 15 feet and cast my shadow into it, but after that, it was pitch black. I took out my flashlight with my left hand and positioned it right under my wrist. I could see to the end of the alley, but there was nobody in sight. There was a dumpster and a stack of cardboard boxes on one side, and a small shelter with a tarp on the other. I shouted into the alley, demanding whoever was in there come out with their hands up. Then a shot rang out. I heard it whiz by me, so I immediately took cover around the corner. My heart was pounding, and it felt like I couldn't breathe fast enough. I called for more much-needed backup, and as I was speaking, a figure sprinted out of the alleyway. For a moment, I didn't comprehend what I had just seen. Then I realized it was a man running away at top speed. I quickly dropped my radio and flashlight and aimed at him. But by then, he was already over 50 feet away and getting further every second. If I missed, the stray could go straight through someone's window, so I made the decision not to fire. Instead, I rushed into the alley to find Kurt. He was bleeding on the ground under the tarp, and his head was bleeding. He was alive and just beginning to regain consciousness. While helping him, I saw that his service weapon was missing. I realized it had been stolen and used against me. Kurt survived, but unfortunately, the woman I shot died, and the other perpetrator was never identified or caught. However, it's likely he was arrested for some other crime later. To this day, I count that night as the most terrifying and inexplicable experience I went through on the force. You would never think that two people would coordinate an ambush on a pair of police officers to attempt to steal their weapons, probably just to stick up a gas station, but with enough desperation and drug-addled thinking, people are capable of anything. I only hope that man didn't end up hurting anybody else, but I know it's a fool's hope.
Under the Texas blazing sun, Hawaiian Falls Water Park buzzed with laughter and energy. Family and friends flocked to the slides, eager to escape the heat and enjoy the many rides it had to offer. My brother and I were enjoying the tidal waves when he pointed at another ride named Aquatube, located at the left corner of the water park.
Look, Larry, I bet that'll be way more fun. What do you say, want to try?
His shiny teeth flashed into a smile, and I knew we were going to try that ride. It's impossible to turn my brother around when he has his mind set on something.
Ain't that too high, Bob?
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Oh, are you a chicken?
Nice, Bob. Really nice. You're so mature.
Oh, come on. You'll be just fine. It ain't that big.
That's probably what your ex said before leaving you.
Shut up. Let's go.
The air was filled with the stink of sweat and chlorine as we ascended the steps to the Aquatube. It was advertised proudly as the tallest in a 100-mile radius, and I believed it. I've never dealt well with heights, and looking down over the edge of the railing made me feel a bit queasy. I wasn't sure how I was going to endure actually sliding down the attraction itself.
Hey Larry, look, even those chicks are braver than you. Stop freaking yourself out, man. Just enjoy.
As we walked up those never-ending stairs, my brother got busy flirting with the group of girls ahead of us. After what felt like hours of climbing, we reached the top. The round entrance of the slide yawned before us. It reminded me of the mouth of the shark from Jaws. Water rushed down the tube, creating a constant gentle roar that made it a little difficult to hear, and it was pitch dark inside the tube. One by one, the park patrons in front of us were guided by the bored-looking attendant into the slide, after which he'd start a stopwatch and look at it for about 30 seconds. I figured that was how he made sure that nobody bumped into each other on the way down. Eventually, our turn came with Bob going first. I was shaking, extremely nervous, and my brother could tell. He put a hand on my right shoulder and told me, "It's gonna be all right, Larry. I'll see you down at the bottom." His teeth sparkled once again from the basking sunlight as he smiled at me. He very confidently glided down the slide.
Woo!
I stood there, staring at the dark tube ready to gulp me like a prey.
Move, will ya? We don't have all day.
Yes. Excuse me. Has there been any accident in the slide so far?
Boy, don't waste my time. If you're so damn scared, then go to the kids' pool. Came here to the water park for silly chit-chat.
The attendant was growing impatient with me, and it was a do-or-die situation for me. I sat down while a stream of water flowed under me.
Remember to stay still and keep your legs crossed. Enjoy.
The grumpy middle-aged attendant pushed my shoulders down and I started to slide down the dark tube. Now, those who have been inside the Aquatube know how the ambience shifts in seconds once you go down. It's like all of a sudden, all the sounds of life die down. And all you're left with is the echoing splashing of water and trapped wind traveling through the hollow. My heart never pumps so fast.
Ah! Bobby, I'm gonna kill you for this! Why did I even agree to this? Damn it!
I slid like a leaf on a river, not knowing when I would meet the end. All I wanted was to see the sky. 30 seconds into the slide, something happened. So far, I kept my eyes closed out of fear. But then, I didn't feel myself moving anymore. Also, the stream of water that was supposed to help guide me down had stopped running. When I opened my eyes, I found myself in complete darkness.
Bob? What's happening?
I trembled my body, thinking it might help to start the gliding again. But the surface of the tube was as dry as a desert.
Hello? Can anyone hear me?
I realized I was stuck.
Hello? I'm stuck down here! Someone? Anyone? Oh no, why is this happening to me?
Sweat started drenching me. My heart raced in my throat. Breathing became difficult. Oxygen felt scarce. The air grew hotter, and I had no clue if anyone knew I was trapped there.
Bobby, please! Help me! I don't want to die in here!
I felt the walls begin to close in around me, pushing, nudging at my limbs. It felt like I couldn't breathe anymore. Everything was closing in fast.
No! No, I can't give up! I have to try to crawl down!
I began to move my legs, dragging my body downward. It wasn't easy. Without water, I risked falling hard on the landing. Darkness obscured the tube structure. I couldn't see far ahead. But then suddenly, water started to flow again.
Oh, thank God.
My brother probably went to the attendant when he didn't see me coming out of the slide. They must have realized their mistake. As I started to slide, a loud noise and vibrations approached me. Before I could figure out what it was, something hit me hard, and my vision blurred.
Larry? Larry! Wake up! Wake up, bud!
My brother's voice pulled me out of the unconscious state, and I felt excruciating pain on my back and shoulders.
What happened to me? Are you crazy, dude? I could have killed you!
I saw a heavy-set guy standing in his swim trunks looking down at me with a panic-stricken face. I realized there was a small crowd of people surrounding me. Everyone was shocked, and so was I.
Larry, what happened in there? When you didn't come out for 5 minutes, I got worried and went back to the top, but the attendant said...
I got stuck. The water stopped running, and I almost died in there. Oh God, I think I'm gonna be sick.
Later, I found out that while I was stuck inside the tube, the water came back on. A heavy-set guy came down the slide, crashing into me and forcing me out, landing on top of me in the plunge pool. It turns out the attendant hadn't checked to see if I had exited the slide. When I was 14, I went on vacation with my parents and my uncle's family. My cousin Miles, who was 2 years younger than me, was my best friend. One weekend, our dads took us to a nearby water park while they enjoyed food and drinks at the cafe. Miles and I headed straight for the rides. We spent the day trying different slides and waiting in line for various attractions. Since I was older, my dad trusted me to look after both of us. We had done this before, so we didn't expect any trouble.
Dude, let's try the splash pool.
Sure, but if you pee in it, the water turns blue. I hope you know that.
Shut up! I never pee in public pools.
Oh? Then why do you smell so bad all the time?
We were chatting and joking around, and I was teasing Miles like an older brother would. Suddenly, two men who seemed to be in their 50s started laughing at something we said. We hadn't noticed them watching us before. We smiled at them briefly, then went back to our conversation.
So, as I was saying, Mr. Smelly Cat, I will punch you if you call me that one more time.
We were alone when we heard those men make some uncomfortable remarks.
Oh, those bikinis are nice. Hey, girls. Girls, Want to come with us?
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw one of the men grinning creepily at the other, as if they'd just cracked a big joke when two girls walked by, clearly creeping them out. One of the men even rubbed his hand on his chest in a creepy way.
Someone should report them to security.
Someone definitely will.
Jerks!
Miles cursed them a little too loudly, and I saw one of the men watching us as we walked away. I immediately noticed a lot of red flags, and knew it would only get worse if we gave them any more attention. For the next 15 minutes, we had fun jumping and splashing at each other in the pool. Our dads came over once and called us for ice cream. We said we'd be right there, but then Miles told me he needed to pee. He was scared the water would turn blue if he did it in the pool, so we got out and headed to the washroom. There were four washrooms located around the water park. The closest to us was behind the trash can section. Also, it was the emptiest one, so we rushed to it so we could both be done with our business in no time. Inside the washroom, there were four stalls. Miles and I took the first two since I also needed to go. As I finished and flushed, I heard footsteps entering the washroom. Then, I heard two voices.
Why don't you guard the door? But what if they tackle you? You think those skinny brats will outrun me? Fine. I'm gonna watch out and stop people from entering. But how will you do that? I'll tell them maintenance work is taking place. Good idea.
One pair of footsteps left the bathroom, and another pair started coming close towards our door.
Bro, did you?
Keep quiet. The footsteps stopped right outside my door. I saw a man's shadow under the stall. Carefully, I crouched down to check if he was alone. I peeked out and saw two ugly, hairy feet with dirty nails right outside my stall. I was paralyzed with fear. It was clear that they were up to no good. Quickly, I silently texted my dad, wanting these creeps to get caught red-handed. But then the banging started.
Come out! Come out! I have treats for you boys!
Leave us alone!
Miles, calm down. Don't respond to him.
Calm down? How can you expect me to stay calm when there's some creep outside our door? Screw that! Oh, God. Help! Help! Someone, please help us! This freak is trying to kill us!
What did you call me? I swear, once I get my hands on you, I'll skin you alive, you little piece of...
You can't even touch us. The doors are strong enough to hold us until help comes.
Really? Why don't I test it then?
Saying this, the man backed away. I could hear his footsteps going toward the sink. The sound of rampaging through the whole washroom echoed in our ears. I guess he was trying to find something to use to break our doors. But when he finally couldn't, he started throwing himself at my door. With his gigantic weight, the silicone door shuddered. There was chaos inside the washroom, like a storm brewing. Miles kept screaming, but I knew our dads would arrive any minute. I didn't mention it to the man because I wanted him to face the consequences. He went for the fourth strike when I heard my uncle and dad burst into the washroom.
Miles, Gerald, come out. Security, this is the other guy. Get these morons out here and make sure you report them to the cops.
I emerged from the washroom to find Miles had fainted from panic inside his stall. The security team dragged those two men out of the water park, and then the local police escorted them away. My dad and I went to the police station, where I explained how these men had been harassing young girls in the park and became aggressive when we confronted them. They were arrested on charges of harassment, vandalism, and attempted murder. One of them even had a pocket knife. Who knows what could have happened to me and my cousin if they had caught us?